time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about this park ranger's experience when things go horribly wrong in the state of Florida. When you think of Florida, you think palm trees, beautiful beaches, and toll roads. Well, there's more to the state than that. You got alligators and lots of them. And when some crooked things start happening, people start disappearing, and when bodies start showing up at the park, things start to get creepy. Now let's get spooky. It was alligator time for us at the park, which was also the most important time, because alligators were by far the most important thing to keep an eye out for while on the job. One careless move, and you're in a world of misery. We take every possible precaution so that every person having an encounter with an alligator isn't remotely likely, but you can't be too careful anymore. We've only had a few issues the entire time I've been here, but those were incidents that everyone on the job will remember. We have a variety of areas in the park, but we take extra special care with the wetlands, because that's where the majority of alligators are, and that's where they stay. One of our protocols is to monitor exactly where the alligators are and count exactly how many are there. The count is done precisely every day at the exact same time. On the rare occasions we don't get the exact same number, we keep an eye on every area until we get the right number. So when it was that time of the day, I left my desk at the ranger station, walked out into the thick humidity, and headed to my truck so I could meet the others on duty tonight for gator time. I've always enjoyed the task because I've always found watching them fascinating. Growing up down here in South Florida, there's something I've always been aware of. Dad made sure I not only knew about them, he made sure I was wary of them. It's a lesson that's served me well ever since, because I cannot tell you how many people I've known over the years who have messed around and paid for it, but it's more than a few. Once I had driven the appropriate distance, I got out of the truck and carefully approached the alligator pen, which was impeccably maintained and cordoned off by a combination of naturally high rocks and modern fencing. Within it, 36 alligators were contained around a large pond, plenty of flat rocks, and a ton of sand. Today, most of the alligators sat there contently in the sun by the water, but I had no doubt they could sense my presence as I got closer. Seeing them lounging in the balmy air, it makes it all the more striking when they suddenly lunge forward, seemingly out of nowhere. No matter how many times I've seen it literally 1,000 times, it's always an eerie sight. But then I took a step closer and thought something looked out of place. Something was in the pen that didn't belong there. So I took a step closer, and that was when I saw what it was. A hand sticking partially out of the water. I took a deep breath before I radioed it in. Stuff like this happening isn't all that unheard of around here, but that doesn't make the sight any less stark or horrifying. My colleagues immediately came out to where I was after contacting the police, who also arrived as quickly as possible. After they questioned us and recorded what we had to say, they secured the scene and the park personnel in charge of maintaining the area fished out the hand with the assistance of the forensics team. The hand was attached to a part of an arm, and while I was far from an expert, it looked fresh to my eyes. Certainly it hadn't been in the alligator pen long enough for them to devour it, so it must have gotten in there very recently. Once I was finally free to go, I hopped in my own personal car and left the park. Then I got the view I always got on the way in and out of the park, which was of the ocean and the horizon. Everyone should be so lucky to get a view like this on your commute to work. With the palm trees serving as the backdrop, it's a stunning sight at both sunrise and sunset. On the way home, I stopped at a local restaurant and grabbed a fish sandwich and onion rings for dinner, which I ate with some leftover ice cream pie for dessert. Growing up, plenty of my extended family worked in fishing, and we were always eating fresh-caught seafood. Since I spent plenty of time on boats myself, I knew how to handle one. And since my cousin Adam had coconut trees in his backyard, many of the desserts we had for get-togethers were coconut-based. Coconut cake is probably my personal favorite. With those fond memories in the back of my head, I tried to unwind after the shock of work today with some TV. But it would be several days before we had more information on what was found in the alligator pen. After being examined, it was quickly concluded that whoever the hand had belonged to had already been deceased by the time it had been severed from the body. It wasn't hard to conclude that it had presumably been removed from the body specifically for a reason, as opposed to someone snooping around the alligator pen and losing a limb in the process. So then the question became why. Since there was no other leads, and nothing specifically to keep an eye out for, we all settled on keeping a close watch for anything unusual for the next few days. Everything was almost back to normal when one final report came from the police department. Their experts confirmed that the hand had been wearing a ring connected to a pawn shop located an hour away, and they had investigated and gotten no additional leads. When I heard the name of the shop, I sighed deeply. I was familiar with it because it was owned by my distant cousin Vic. He's a nice guy, but let's just say he's an interesting character to say the least. And he knows plenty of people even more interesting than him. So when I had the next day off, I drove an hour south to see him. It was a bright blue afternoon when I parked in front of the pawn shop, which advertised itself in bright red letters with matching red neon lights lining the doors and windows. Inside, it was filled with glass-displayed cases and the smell of air freshener was overpowering. "How can I?" The tall man leaned behind the counter began until he recognized me. "Jerry, good to see you." He walked out from behind the counter, wrapped his arms around me, and gave me a hug like he hadn't just seen me last month for a family cookout. "Hey, Vic. Good to see you. So, what brings you in?" "They found a severed hand in the alligator pen at my park. It was wearing a ring that was purchased here."
"No way. That was your park?"
"Uh-huh. And I was wondering if you knew anything, aside from what you told the police."
"Wish I did, but I got nothing.
It was bought months ago for some cash, and that's all the records could tell us. I don't remember who bought it or who sold it in the first place." "That's what I thought, but I thought I'd check for myself."
"Understood."
We chatted for a while longer before I left and drove back home. The next day I was back at work bright and early, but all ideas of a normal day were gone when I arrived and saw the police back at the park.
It didn't take me long to find out that a park boat had been stolen sometime in the night. So as per our procedure, several of us took the remaining boats out of the local waters to see if we could find anything. I didn't need much convincing to get behind the wheel of a boat. So I immediately went to the park boathouse, got behind the wheel of a boat, and wasted no time in starting the engine and steering down the narrow waterway and out to deeper waters. As I did, I felt the rush of euphoria I always got.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
While piloting a boat, feeling the spray on your face as you glide on the water is always an incredible feeling. I could hear the seagulls nearby, and occasionally one would zoom ahead as I guided the boat one way or another. I had a blast piloting the boat, but I didn't see anything. So I eventually steered it back to the Ranger's boathouse and backed the boat up into its proper spot before I secured it in place and went back to the Ranger station. It was early afternoon by then and time for lunch. So I helped myself to a sandwich and potato chips I brought. As I ate, I hung out with Jess and Mike, two of my fellow Rangers. 10 minutes later, Marilyn, the senior park ranger, strolled into the break room just as I had finished eating. As she did, her eyes were rolling so hard I was worried they'd fall out of her head. "Has anyone heard from Griffin?" We all collectively shook our heads. "He was supposed to come in today, but hasn't. Again, I swear, that's the second time this month. After you're done, can one of you go to his place and see what his deal is?"
"I'll take care of it," I nodded.
"Thank you, Jerry. Unless there's a very good reason. Griffin won't be with us after today. This is absurd. We've been more than fair with him."
No doubt about that. Griffin was the worst park employee I had ever seen. He was the worst employee anyone at the park had ever seen. None of us were surprised it had come to this. So after I tossed my empty sandwich wrapper and potato chip bag into the trash, I got in my car and drove to Griffin's house, which was only 20 minutes away. Griffin lived in a single-story ranch house in a typical-looking neighborhood. The house, which looked older, had been given a recent coat of paint. It came with a double car garage, and unless Griffin's car was parked inside, it was gone. I wasn't sure what that meant at this point, but I carefully got out of my car and walked up to the front door. After I rang the doorbell, I knocked twice in quick succession and waited for a response. I wasn't sure, but I thought I heard something moving inside. Not like a person answering the door, but a dog or something scampering when they heard something outside. So I walked around to the side of the house until I arrived at the back and saw there was a patio with a glass sliding door. There were no blinds or curtains closed, so I could see inside the house from here. At first, everything looked normal. But then I saw something on the floor inside the house, and I took a step closer for a better look. When I did, I leapt back in shock.
because sitting on the floor of Griffin's house, just inside the glass sliding door underneath the dining room table, was an alligator. Fully grown, and it sat there like it was the most natural thing in the world. But in the blink of an eye, it noticed movement from outside, and the alligator turned to face me, and I saw the glimmer of both eyes taking me in. The alligator's jaws, which had been closed, opened ever so slightly, and that was my cue to immediately get out of there. I wasn't quite sure how thick of the glass the sliding door was, but I certainly wasn't going to bet on it against a fully grown alligator. Once I sprinted back to my car, I pulled out of the driveway while I called Marilyn. She answered on the second ring.
Yeah?
I have no idea what's going on with Griffin, but there's an alligator in his house. I managed to get out despite being slightly out of breath.
What do you mean? There's an alligator in his house?
I mean, I walked up to his door, knocked, and thought I heard something inside. Then I went around the back, looked through the sliding door, and there was an alligator, fully grown, inside his house, under the table. And when it saw me, I decided to get out of there fast and get back to my car. Marilyn said nothing for a full 15 seconds.
I'll call the police and animal control. Just don't go inside no matter what.
She eventually mumbled. Gladly. Then I waited until the professionals arrived. Marilyn was right behind them, and we observed from a distance as the animal control officials went in, and after careful work, retrieved not one but two fully grown alligators. Then once it was all clear, the police went in and searched the place. It was a mess from the alligators, but there was no sign of any attack or any other type of violence. Nor did anyone have a clue how they got in there. So the most likely conclusion was that someone deliberately let them in. Griffin was now considered officially MIA, so the police could track down Griffin's family and go from there. As for me, my shift was over, so I headed back to town. By the time I returned, the sun was setting, so I decided to stretch my legs for a while. Once the walk made me feel better, I grabbed some fritters along with some ice cream to eat as I walked along the shoreline just a few miles away from my house. The sun had gone down by now, and the palm trees were fluttering in the balmy night air. I loved it. No matter how old I got, I always loved the feel of a tropical beach at night, especially when you build a fire on the sand. Hearing the crackle of the fire and the splash of the waves is beyond amazing. It's also amazing to see from the water when you're looking at the shoreline. There's no doubt when the image comes to mind when one thinks of campfire stories is being in the middle of the woods full of pine trees on a crisp night with a full moon, usually with some fog drifting around. I love this atmosphere as much as anyone. But that's not the only good setting for a campfire. You could also have an amazing campfire on the beach. And you could also have a campfire story aboard a ship. It's the exact same mood, time of day, and idea. It simply replaces the dense dark woods with the dense dark ocean, and the group of people huddled around a campfire, or inside the cabin with a group of people huddled together in the hull of a ship where everyone is bunking for the night. Once I had my fill of the evening air, I went back to my apartment and read a book until it was time to head to bed. I woke up the next morning to an overcast sky and a wind that made the palm trees sway intensely. I had some breakfast and coffee until it was time for me to go in for my shift at the park. Not surprisingly, the drab sky made people less than enthused to come to the park, so it was a slow day. Before too long, it was just me and one other coworker out on patrol in our respective trucks. I was far out in the depths of the wetlands when out of nowhere, I saw an unfamiliar boat pull up to the nearby embankment that held back the water in case of flooding. I was immediately wary and radioed the base that I saw an unfamiliar boat and to be on alert. I reported that I could see it being piloted by two men and wasn't sure, but I suspected they may have been armed. But before I could do anything further, I heard the roar of another boat engine and a second boat sped into view. But unlike the first one, this one looked very familiar, and it was the missing one that had been taken from the park just the other day. But my jaw dropped when the boat came into closer view, and behind the wheel was Griffin. "Another boat's here, and it's Griffin," I managed to say before the first boat immediately roared away from the embankment and chased after Griffin with a vengeance. He didn't waste time flooring it out of there either, and he hit the water with a speed I had never seen on a park boat before. With no better ideas, I hit the gas and peeled right after them, the gravel kicking up dust behind me just like the water was doing behind Griffin. Since the park was so water-centric, there were numerous roads that lined the various streams and other bodies of water that were connected to the area, so I could follow right along as the two boats followed each other.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Other on the pursuit. And if I wasn't mistaken, I saw one of the two men take out a revolver and fire several shots at Griffin's boat and miss. I did everything I could to drive steady while I followed the chase. It was something for sure. There were several times I thought for sure one of them would crash, but nothing happened. Or at least nothing did until several minutes later when the narrow mouth of the tributary opened up into a larger body of water, and I saw a small fishing boat sitting directly in their path. Time seemed to stop as I watched both boats suddenly try to avoid the fishing boat. Griffin definitely managed to pull it off, but the other boat swerved too sharply and immediately lost control and went into a large but flat patch of land that was kept contained from the outside by high rock barricades. The boat slammed right into the thick rock barrier, which didn't budge an inch, but the two men were projected face first into the water and grass contained within the barrier, which just so happened to be the park's main crocodile resting area. I watched several crocodiles lunge out of the way at this unwanted intrusion. And when the two men realized where they were, they both yelled out in fear so loudly I could hear them from inside the truck. As the two of them frantically scrambled up to one of the trees inside the crocodile nest while a crocodile eagerly followed them, I radioed back the base what had happened and where the chase had ended. Then I got out of the truck and walked over to where Griffin had parked the boat. "Hey, Jerry," Griffin smiled at me. "You're probably wondering what's going on." "No, I'm not curious at all why there was a hand found in the alligator pen, why there are two alligators in your house, and got into a chase right in front of me with two guys who were shooting at you and are now trying to avoid being a crocodile's lunch." "All right, I earned that one." Over Griffin's shoulder, I saw one of the men try to take a cell phone out of his pocket. But when the guy tried to unlock the screen, he dropped the phone and it landed straight into the water below them. Griffin and I were kept entertained by the two of them trying to stay out of the crocodile's reach while we waited for police to arrive. He also filled me in on what had happened to him. He was doing some freelance contracting work for a local businessman, and overheard some things he shouldn't have. And one thing led to another, and he was forced to flee after he found the two alligators in his house. The hand was taken from an already deceased John Doe and was left in the park as a way to intimidate him. The police arrived in good enough time and managed to rescue the two men from the crocodiles. Although, depending on who they worked for, they may have preferred the crocodiles to be taken into custody. Griffin explained to the authorities what had happened, and he was free to go. Then our park colleagues took care to make sure the crocodile nest was fine, and the rock barrier was completely intact. They both were. By then, it was well past lunchtime, and the overcast day had turned bright and chipper. I'd been given the rest of the day off, and was feeling beyond hungry from the excitement earlier. Almost as if he could read my mind, Griffin turned to me and asked, "You in the mood for something to eat?" I was, and we helped ourselves to a meal of coconut shrimp, fries, coleslaw, and hush puppies at one of my favorite restaurants by the park. As we were finishing, Griffin looked up to me. "I was wondering, you have a boat, right?" he asked after a sip of iced tea. "I have access to one, yes. Why?" "I was wondering if you could give me a ride."
"A ride?" I repeated blankly.
"Yeah, a ride. My cousin Miles has gone missing recently, and I've been checking in on a few of his known haunts. One of a few I haven't looked at yet is on a deserted island most people don't know about. And I was wondering if you could give me a lift. I'll even pay you for your time." "You sure he didn't steal a park boat while fleeing from the two gunmen?" Griffin chuckled. "No, that's not Miles. Miles was always very predictable and dependable."
"You sure you guys are related?"
"Very funny. I've been hearing about this my whole life. Yes, I'm sure. Jokes aside, I'm actually worried." "We all are. This isn't like Miles to just run off. We filed a report and stuff, but there are literally no leads. It's just like he vanished."
"I see. You just want a ride, nothing else."
"Of course."
"When did you have in mind?"
"Is now a bad time?"
I shrugged.
"I got nowhere else to be."
Griffin smiled.
"Then what are we waiting for?"
"I got access to Uncle Pete's fishing boat easy enough. Once I gave him a heads up and he gave me the keys, I made sure everything was all good to go before I started the ignition and we headed for open water." Griffin was out on the deck, watching the wake of the boat left behind as we headed to the island in question. The island was farther away than I expected, and the moon was in the sky by the time it appeared on the horizon. As we got closer, I took out the binoculars and got a closer look at the island, which was small and rather flat. There was a nice bit of beach in the front with impressive palm trees dotting the sand and plenty of lush greenery that lined the shore and served as part of the island's interior, but the sand itself looked a bit rocky. But my stomach sank slightly when I realized I could see boats anchored far away on the left side of the island. There was a variety of boats there, but they were all sleek and built for speed. I could also see from where deep within the island's thick greenery there was a fire burning. I could just barely make out the flames flickering through a gap in the trees, and the smoke billowing from it was only faintly visible in the night sky. I had no idea what was going on, but somehow I knew it wasn't good. I'd been to more parties and cookouts on the beach than I could count, and it never had this atmosphere. A normal beach hangout is loud and boisterous, with people hanging out everywhere while sipping colorful drinks decorated with umbrellas or contained within a pineapple.
There is usually music playing while people toss a frisbee around or do literally a thousand other things. It's full of life and the energy sizzles in the air. There are plenty of bonfires, tiki torches, and a million other types of illumination that make the beach come alive at night in a way not possible during the day. This was the antithesis of all that. Everything was completely dark and secretive. If it hadn't been for the cloudless night with a full moon, visibility out here would be virtually non-existent. This was some kind of meeting, and if you weren't invited, you didn't want to be there. "Let's get out of here," I whispered to Griffin. "Now." I half expected him to argue with me, but to his credit, he quickly nodded and said, "Let's move." But before I could do or say anything, I saw a flicker of movement from deep within the island's greenery. I immediately grabbed the binoculars again and held them up to my face. When I focused in, I could just faintly see the silhouette of someone running towards the beach, or more specifically, running to the boats anchored on the far side of the island. I couldn't tell who the figure was, but they were dressed in clothing that looked torn. But much more notable was the fact that they were running, sprinting to be exact, towards the boats. I handed the binoculars to Griffin and gestured for him to look there. When he did, I heard him let out a small gasp.
"That's Miles."
"You sure?" He quickly nodded his head.
"Positive."
And before he could say another word, I saw shadows emerge from the island's interior. A bunch of people dressed in black that almost seemed to move in a solid wave towards Miles. They weren't moving quite as fast.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But they were pretty quick as they tried to follow Miles, who had slipped into one of the boats and was frantically trying to get it started while the people dressed in black had taken out knives and machetes as they closed in on Miles, their footsteps kicking up sand as they moved. It felt like it took an eternity, but it was only a few seconds before Miles had gotten the boat started and was pulling up anchor and steering away as the people in black were almost at the boats. While he was doing that, I was trying to radio the Coast Guard and other law enforcement about what was going on. When I managed to get to a radio operator from the Coast Guard on the line, I told them where we were and the general gist of what was going on. Just as the operator was telling me to be careful and sit tight, I saw Miles raise his arm and was holding something in his hand, and moments later, there was a bright flash of light there before a deafening explosion, and one of the other boats exploded into a thousand little pieces that lit up the night sky before everything landed right back in the water with a splash.
"What was that?"
the operator asked, still keeping an impressively calm tone. "I'm pretty sure he just blew up one of the other boats with a flare gun. I had recognized the sight from my work in the park." Miles by now had put some distance between himself and the people in black who had been knocked backwards by the boat's explosion. But Miles wasn't done, because thanks to the light made from the fire of the still smoldering boat that burned on the island's shore, I could see him raise the flare gun again as he fired it a second time at a different boat. The flare landed just as accurately as the first one, and the second boat caught fire before it shattered moments later. its sleek white surface reducing shards of glass and wood that sprayed the people dressed in black and the few remaining boats in one piece. The adrenaline in the air was intense, and Griffin and I watched as Miles hit the accelerator with a vengeance and steered away from the island. The smoke from the fire was intense and coated the air within minutes, so only the charred wreckage of the boat still crackled with flames was visible from our boat. Or at least that was the only thing visible until the boats of the Coast Guard came into view, which seemed like hours later. One of the boats pulled up alongside us, and the personnel on it questioned the two of us, while the others went towards the island. I just started answering a question when the sound of gunshots filled the air, and the Coast Guard were engaging the people dressed in black who were still on the island. I could now see that several of them were holding firearms, and they had opened fire the moment they saw the Coast Guard boats. It didn't take long for the shooting to stop, and the people in black eventually surrendered and were handcuffed and placed into custody. The Coast Guard was able to confirm that people in black were infamous criminals who engaged in piracy and were wanted in connection with numerous crimes. When Miles returned to shore, he ran straight for the first police department that he could and told them about his experience in being abducted by them on the island he knew well. The pirates weren't quite sure what to do with him, so they left him in captivity on the island until they could make up their minds. But he managed to escape when he saw a cottonmouth slithering on the sand near where he had been held. Aside from all the time he had spent outdoors, Miles had experience working at a zoo, so he knew exactly how to handle a cottonmouth so it would attack the pirate guarding him. Then it was all a matter of time of getting some keys and running to a boat, where he grabbed a flare gun to blow up the other boats and escape. The pirates were all immediately taken into custody and charged with numerous crimes related to their past actions. Miles was immediately labeled a hero and became somewhat famous in the area from all the news coverage. When Griffin and I went home that night, we celebrated with some key lime pie that we had ate while sitting out on the beach. Since Griffin's place was still being repaired from the two alligators, I let him sleep on my couch. He was grateful, and he was allowed back to work as a park ranger, where to almost everyone's surprise, he cleaned up his act and became a better employee. I was probably the one person who wasn't all that surprised. Finding two alligators in your house will do that. He also kept his word and paid me for taking him on our little sailing excursion.